Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast, and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you very much for returning to this show, and also for your wonderful emails, and for the many donations that have come in over the last month. Thank you so much. It all goes towards fueling and helping the work that we're doing here. We've had a lot of data transferred over the last couple of months, according to Adam, my webmaster at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. What does that mean? It means more of you are looking at the website, more of you are downloading shows. There's been a huge leap in the amount of data that we are shifting, which is amazing, because it all means that this show and this website, www.theunexplained.tv, has much greater awareness than it, say, had 3 or 4 months ago. So something's happening, and I'm grateful for it, whatever it might be. You know, the technology I'm understanding more than ever, but there are still things that I have to ask Adam about, because he understands. The guest on the show this time is somebody who doesn't get an airing at all in the UK. He's never off radio and television in America. He is economic trend watcher Gerald Celente. You may not like some of the things that he has said on this show before, but you certainly have to give him a hearing, because when it came to the recession that we've all been in the middle of over the last year or so, Gerald Celente called it correctly. He was there first, and he called it right. So let's hear what he's got to say about the way this thing is going to go, because I have a feeling that the government here and other people in the orthodox financial sector may not agree with what this man has to say, but you need to hear him. So this show is not only about UFOs and cryptozoology and ghost hunting and electronic voice phenomena, life after death, crop circles, and all the other things we talk about. It is also about giving a voice to people who have points of view that you do not get to hear on the mainstream media in the UK. He gets on the air in America. Britain is a different thing. Now, as I've said before, we are independent media here. This show is produced by myself. Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot gets it out to you on the net. Martin made the theme tune that we hear at the beginning and the end of the show. We have our guests, and you listen to it, and that is the entire family that constitutes The Unexplained. It's only us. What, 5 people? You listening? And the other 4, I think I'm right with the maths there. That's very exciting, I think. But more and more, as corporations consolidate the media in this country and around Europe and around the world, you will need to depend on third force suppliers of content, if you want to call it content, like myself, for information like this, because the mainstream media is not going to do it. In many cases, they've never done it. They're going to do it even less now. We had news from the BBC in the last day or so here in the UK that the BBC plans to cut down quite radically its presence on the net, also aims to get rid of 2 of its digital radio stations. Where is that content going to go? You know, will it disappear completely? Maybe. Or will it go onto the net and somebody else perhaps might pick up those forms of broadcasting and run with them? I think they should, because I think the third force, which this show is part of, is going to become increasingly important. We can only do that with your support, so please tell your friends about this show, and please, please keep making the donations that you've been making. I'm very, very grateful to you for those. Trend watcher Gerald Celente, the guest this time. Just a couple of things to tell you about before we get to him. First off, Richard C. Hoagland was supposed to be coming on the show to update us about the lights in the sky over Norway. Now, remember I told you he went to a conference in Los Angeles recently. He had some problems out there. When he comes on, he will tell you what they were. But those problems meant that effectively, and not for the first time in this man's career, he lost some of his data. How and why that happened, well, he will tell you about that. I'm not going to tell you on his behalf, but it is a quite amazing story, and it makes you wonder whether there is somebody out there who doesn't want the stuff that Richard Hoagland says that he knows to be made public. I don't know. You decide on that. 2 things in the news in the UK in the last couple of days. The Ministry of Defence says that it will now destroy all future UFO reports that it gets, so it doesn't have to make them public. That's according to a previously secret memo that got into the news here. So the MOD apparently is not interested in your UFO reports. And if it is, it's not going to tell you about that. And the powerful earthquake that killed hundreds of people in Chile, sadly, recently, apparently shifted the Earth's axis and made our days slightly shorter. That's according to a scientist at NASA whose name is Richard Goss. You may well hear more about that. Right, let's get to the guest now. This is going to be a very slightly shorter show because this man's schedule, as you say in the US, is very tight. He's been able to give us half an hour, and I think you will be fascinated by what the guy's got to say. His name is Gerald Celente. He's from the Trends Research Institute in the US, and he's online now to The Unexplained. Gerald, thanks for making time for us.
Oh, my pleasure.
I understand you've just come back from Chile, Gerald. We were talking just a moment ago about Chile on this show. It has been, well, to say that it's a disaster is, of course, an understatement, but you were part of it, yeah?
Yes, I was in the Crown Plaza Hotel in Santiago on the 14th floor when it hit. And for me, as a close combat practitioner and someone who writes about the importance of survival in so many different facets, economic survival, particularly in these times, and when tragedy or the unexpected happens, to act quickly, this was a perfect example of it. For example, first I felt a tremor, and immediately, knowing that Chile is an earthquake zone, and they've had some terrible earthquakes in the past, I immediately proceeded to leave the room. I mean, I was down 14 flights of stairs probably within 3 minutes. I was the first person to evacuate the hotel. And a colleague of mine, a fellow, when the first tremors hit, he said, "Well, if that's over." And I said, "You know, I'm out of here." And I left. The only other person in the stairwell he followed behind was a maid, a Chilean maid, and she was coming down from a couple of floors above me, and she was praying in Spanish.
Wow.
All the way down.
Do you know, I cannot even imagine what that must have been like, but your quick thinking definitely, well, by the looks of it, saved you, didn't it?
Well, it did. The television flying across the room, the lamps coming down, there's not the drawers flying out of the bureaus. There's not a floor left on this hotel. Fortunately, they built it with earthquake protection, but the hotel is basically destroyed. And in the sense that, you know, the walls are warped, the floors, the doors, you know, plaster falling everywhere. But the point being, in that in these times, you don't follow your leader. You follow yourself. Mm. And this, in these economic times, the same principles hold true.
Isn't it true you seem to have been given a situation where you had to demonstrate, you had to practice, in other words, what you've been preaching for all these years?
Exactly, and what I've been trained to do. And there was a part, there was a time when the quake hit. Now remember, this went on for 90 seconds. When it first hit, and I'm up on the 14th floor, and that building is swaying, and objects are being thrown, there was a point when I felt I could die.
Mm-hmm.
But it never stopped me. I just kept moving. But the interesting thing is then to hear the stories of the other people that came out later. Some people went in the bathtub. Other people call the front desk asking what to do. Other people waited for their tour guides to come and give them instruction.
So it's down, really, your survival, and I'm sure that goes for other areas of human endeavor, as they say. Your survival, your continued existence depends on your thought process. And if your thought process says, well, I want to ask somebody else what I should be doing, you're not going to survive. If you take responsibility as you advocate for yourself, then you are.
Exactly. And ironically, in the last trends journal, the top trends for 2010, one of them is neo-survivalism. We wrote about it extensively because we're forecasting a major terrorist strike in 2010 of 9/11 magnitude. And we're predicting that it's going to happen in the U.S. or the NATO countries.
All right. Now, look, a lot of people who are listening to this now will say, how can you know that?
Well, again, if you go back and you Google my name up, Celente, C-E-L-E-N-T-E, or just go to our website, trendsresearch.com, and go to our forecast list, and you'll see that there's an article from USA Today on December 14th, 2000, 9 months before 9/11, and the headline read, 2001 won't be our year, Trendsear says, and we warned that Americans wouldn't be safe at home or abroad. It's called foreign policy. We're political atheists. I'm a citizen of the world. People could give any reasons they want to invade other countries or bomb other people. Whatever their rationale, that's fine with them. But if you're going to wage major wars in countries such as Iraq, Afghanistan, and now including Pakistan to very high levels, there's going to be, it's as old as the Old Testament, an eye for an eye. And now we're in an era of weapons of mass destruction. So we're looking, you don't have to belong to an organization. You could just be a lone wolf terrorist. So militancy, as they're calling it, we call it getting even, is growing. So when 9/11 happened, for example, I live north of New York City, and I know this area like the back of my hand. And there's a nuclear power plant called Indian Point, 45 miles north of Ground Zero. And it's on the Hudson River, and the planes are flying down the Hudson. So what do? You prepare to leave before it. What if they struck that? There would be chaos like we've never seen before. Animals would be given a bad name if you said people behaved like animals, because it would have been more chaos. It would have been much worse than that. So I was ready to leave. And this is the point. The other thing is I tried to get my money out of the bank. I had it in certificates of deposit. I couldn't get it out because CDs or financial instruments in Wall Street was closed. So what we're telling people is to make provisions, prepare for the worst. If the UK, if Germany, if the United States wants to go into other countries and wage war for whatever reasons they have, expect retribution.
But of course, the U.S. and Britain can't be absolved of all of this because we've been doing it too for generations. We've been doing these things for years. But I guess what you're saying is that what has changed is the ability of the people who don't like what you're doing as foreign policy to hit you back and hard.
Exactly. One of my books, Trends 2000, I wrote in the mid-90s. And I front-loaded the book with the breakup of the former Soviet Union. And all of the weapons of mass destruction that were being sold on the black market as the Soviet Union broke up. So you don't have, it's no longer a letter bomb or anthrax. It's suitcase-sized nukes. It's biological warfare.
Now, of course, other people have been saying this, Gerald. Other people have been saying this for a little while now, that this material is out there and has been accessible to the bad guys. But what some of these people say, well, you know, they've had this ability for maybe 10 years, maybe more than that. The material from the old Soviet Union, the old nuclear material that's gone missing, is out there somewhere, but nothing has happened. So if nothing has happened, probably nothing is going to happen.
Again, that's, you know, it was very ironic. When I go into a new, we were doing research down in South America. We were in Argentina, Uruguay, and then in Chile. And every time I go into a city I haven't been in before in another country, I always take a little tour of the city, you know, one of the paid-for tours. And the tour guide was talking about the new building they were building in Santiago, which was going to be the tallest one in South America. And she mentioned that, you know, Chile is, you know, has a lot of earthquakes, but they hadn't had one in 20 years. And, you know, they have one about every 20 years, but you can't go by statistics. And that was the words of, I heard this on Friday, the earthquake hit on Saturday. Nobody can predict the future. What you have to do is be prepared, knowing that the conditions exist. And the conditions now exist, and the reason we're forecasting a high probability of terror 2010 is because of the increasing war in Pakistan. That is the wild card right now. As you well know, the United States is waging a proxy war in South Waziristan, in Swat Valley. Obama has said more Predator missiles into Pakistan, killed approximately 1,000 civilians already. He sent triple the amount of Predators than Bush did during his last year. Wonderful, wonderful candidate, by the way, for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes, that's one way to look at it. But look, the other thing that might militate against all of this, Gerald, though, and I wonder if your forecasts have taken this into account, is that there is more and more of a campaign, a concerted campaign by people in this country and in the United States who don't agree with us going into countries like Pakistan and trying to right the wrongs of the world, who say, get our boys out of there, get our operatives out of there, the ones that we know about and the ones that we don't, and let's concentrate on things at home. Surely those trends are going to militate against what you're talking about, or not?
Not really. Look what happened in the United States in 2006 in the midterm elections. They voted out the Republicans thinking that the Democrats were going to end the war in Iraq. And the Obama people, you know, the people that support him, they turned a blind eye continually to the increased troops in Afghanistan and now the war being waged in Pakistan. You know, I've narrowed it down to six simple words to know what's going on. It's Princeton, Harvard, Yale, bullets, bombs, and banks. That's it. This is what's going on.
Okay.
It's about money. It's about control. People better grow up about this stuff. In the Cold War days, they made communism the boogeyman. Now they're making it terrorism. You can't invade other countries without expecting blowback. What arrogance. Look what happened to the French. Remember when bombs used to blow up on the Champs-Élysées every other week when they invaded Algeria? Guess what? They're not bombing France anymore.
So are you saying that we need to be getting ourselves, and that includes the Brits, out of all of these places, and the world is going to be a wonderful place?
It's not going to be a wonderful place. They'll have their problems, we'll have ours. And by the way, you want to look at a load of hypocrisy, look at the Germans marching into Afghanistan. Boy, did people forget World War II quickly.
All right. Now, you say, and you're right, that everything is interconnected. If we have, because it is unlikely that everybody's going to be brought out of those countries like we've just been talking about, if there is a major terrorist strike, perhaps in this country, perhaps more likely in your country, that, of course, will have effects on the economy, and the economy is already, as you've told us before on this show, is already in the toilet.
Exactly. Look what's going on in Greece. Every day the problem's being solved. Anybody that believes this deserves to stay in their room when the earthquake hits.
All right. Well, Gerald, we are being told in this country, but of course politicians have a vested interest, and that vested interest is the election that's going to be happening here in May of this year, probably May the 6th. We are being told that the economic downturn that you forecast so accurately the last time we spoke, and indeed hit, and we've all been suffering from it, this is all coming to an end now, and the economic cycle is turning in everybody's favor. Is that not so?
It's not so. And the same people that are saying it's over were the same people that said it was never going to come. It's beyond my comprehension as a thinking adult how anybody could believe a politician. You know, it's the second oldest profession, as Ronald Reagan said. But at least in the oldest profession, you have a happy ending, you know?
Well, yes, sometimes.
How could people believe Brown, Bush, Clinton, Berlusconi, Merkel, Sarkozy? How about Laurel and Hardy? Where are they when you need them?
Well, the one thing the politicians are telling us, and they're having to be honest about this on this side of the Atlantic, and from what I'm hearing from radio stations over there, you're being told much the same, is that whoever gets in after this election, we are going to have to face some pretty unpalatable things, which include cuts to public services, cuts all round, really, because of the amount of money that we've had to spend shoring up the banks to stop them collapsing.
Exactly, but that's what they're doing. They're robbing the people. Who made up this stuff too big to fail? How could people be so stupid to swallow such a cheap line? You look what happened in the United States, and look what's going on in Greece with the Goldman Sachs gang. Listen, I'm of Italian descent, and if the names on Wall Street were named Sorrenti, Caruso, Mondavi, Buccini, Rossini, Bellini, they'd call it the Mafia. But you're not allowed to call the white shoe boys crooks and criminals. Oh, no, they're financiers. They don't do loan sharking. They do credit default swaps. Hey, how about an auction rate security? I mean, or a derivative, that's for you. How could people believe this?
All right, now, for simple people, for people, you know, I'm not a financier, you know, I know a little bit about economics, but then I'm paid to know a bit about it. We've been told that all these bad practices that got us all in the problems that we've been in, that caused this recession, depression, whatever you want to call it, this stuff has been curbed now. All right, some of the bankers are still getting their big bonuses. Is that not so?
No, that's just whitewash to make the people feel good. You know, all of this began, by the way, under the Clinton administration. And it's very interesting. I was going back over my notes on 9/11. I had a lot of time flying down to South America, and I took my old journals with me. And what they did was right away they started calling for deregulation because business was so terrible. And that was going on actually before 9/11 as well, and just accelerated. I'm making the point about the Goldman Sachs gang and others, about if these people failed, it would make no difference. They turned Goldman Sachs into from a brokerage firm, they made them overnight, they turned them into a bank holding company. They're not a bank. You don't go to a Goldman Sachs ATM machine. You don't have Goldman Sachs checks. Wall Street has hijacked Washington. The Wall Street gang, the Wall Street mob is in control. And it's worldwide.
Well, listen, I heard a statistic this morning. It was on American radio. It hasn't been revealed in this country. I don't think people understand it over here. You tell me if the statistic is right. I heard that now in the U.S., the banking sector is now accounting for 62 or maybe 63% of gross domestic product, which is basically the entire economy, whereas, say, 20 years ago, it was 10%.
That's accurate.
All right, well, if that statistic is true, I have a feeling we need to be worried about that, but I'm not entirely sure why.
Well, the reason why is because they'll keep robbing us blind. And when all else fails, they take you to war. These are money junkies. Don't people understand this? There's heroin junkies. There's junkies on different kinds of prescription drugs. These are money junkies. They can't get enough. Why are these people? Look at this Warren Buffett that everybody bows to. I want more money. I want more billions. I want more billions. We didn't have these billionaires, 100 millionaires for generations. This was unheard of. And now you have these financiers. You know why? They need the best and the brightest minds, and they don't want to curb executive compensation.
Tell me.
Because you need the best and the brightest criminal minds to pull off these kind of scams.
All right, let's be clear about it then. Are you saying here, you seem to be, that there is an agenda, and the agenda is dictated by these money boys who now have control of Wall Street? Arguably, they've always had control of the government here in the UK, but I don't want to get into that right now. What's the agenda? What are they doing?
The agenda is greed and power. It's as simple as that. These are junkies. These are sick people, they're psychotic.
All right, so what can we do as ordinary people here? You know, we've got our democratic choice to make in May here with the elections, but beyond that, there's not a whole lot we can do, is there?
Well, there is. People have to voice their discontent. They have to rally. They have to go to the streets. They brought down communism by going to the streets. And people have to stop believing the baloney. They have to start thinking for themselves. We don't tell anybody what to believe. It's a Trends Research Institute. Our motto is think for yourself. Nobody tells us what to think either. We look at the data and we analyze it. We make our forecast based on the available data.
So if we're going to the street, if we have to protest here, if we have to protest in the U.S., what are we going to be asking for? What do we want?
Well, the things we need to do is the government has to open up and let other people start running for office. Number two, this globalization is killing the world. You know, I'm a believer in the golden rule. Those that have the gold rule. And right now the gold is going to China. It's bad enough in America with the Democrats and Republicans, these fascists that are running this country. I don't want the Chinese running my life either.
But globalization is a trend that's been going on for decades, since the Second World War, isn't it, Gerald? That trend has been going on for as long as I've been on this earth. You ain't going to stop it, are you?
Well, what people need to do is they have to start buying local. We have enough resources in our countries, respectively, that we don't need to buy cheap junk. We need to start building, and we need to start working with each other. We have to build our communities by supporting our communities. We have to keep our money at home and stop. Look, to me, the greatest president in my lifetime was Dwight D. Eisenhower. And this is a guy that was the supreme commander of the Allied forces. He was a five-star general. He was a real commander-in-chief, not like these little puppets like Blair and Brown and Bush.
Well, I have to tell you, Gerald, that I am at this moment sitting in a place that is very, very close to his World War II secluded and camouflaged headquarters, and the guy here is still remembered very fondly in London for what he did during the war. And you're saying we need that kind of leadership?
Well, exactly. He was leaving office as a two-term Republican president, and he warned the world that the military-industrial complex was taking over the country, robbing us the genius of the scientists, the sweat of the laborers, and the future of the children. This is Dwight D. Eisenhower. And you tell people this, and their response is, hey, what's for lunch?
Well, look, I mean, if you want to get into real conspiracy territory here, don't you think the part of the problem that we have is that people are simply, this side of the Atlantic, and yours certainly, they don't think about these things. Why? Because they're provided with bread and circuses. There's lots of reality TV out there. They want to know what's for lunch. They want to know who's won, America's Got Talent or American Idol, whatever. And they're not interested in what you say is the real agenda.
Well, a lot of people are, and a lot of people aren't. And you're right. Well, look at the, you know, again, I was telling you I was going over my journal from 9/11. And you had people like this guy, Tim Russett, who passed on recently, who is a well-known journalist here. And he was saying, well, you know, I'm a journalist, but I'm also an American. You know, and all this kind of stuff. You know, let's just get to the facts. I don't care what your religion is. I don't care what you believe in. I don't care what country you come from. And that's what people have to see. You're right. It's bread and circuses. I'm in Argentina, and I'm watching Tiger Woods saying he's sorry. I love it. All these guys that get caught. Oh, I'm so sorry. And they go, for sex therapy. You know, come on. You know, sex. How about, you know, you were tired of being with your wife? I mean, could you say that, you know?
God. Well, you know, that's public life, but people buy this stuff up. They love it. The newspapers in the UK are full of this. And we have a footballer over here, too, who's been, as we say over here, playing away. That's made the headlines, and people tend to be more interested in that kind of stuff. But maybe we can both get a little bit of hope for all of this in the thought that perhaps people are not trusting to the same extent the big institutions and the big corporations like they did, because in banking they've seen that they've failed. We've even seen little examples like Toyota cars. We've seen that they had the several recalls that they have had, so they are not infallible. Maybe, just maybe, in 2010, this is something that's going to make people stop and think.
Exactly, and we can have a renaissance. Look, after the Black Plague, a renaissance followed. And I was mentioning what could change it around. What can people do? I buy all local. Look, in the UK, you still have those wonderful markets in so many places.
Yeah, we do.
And those are the things to keep supporting and demand more of. I don't buy corporate food. I'm Italian. I know what good food is. That's junk. I don't go into chain stores. I support everything I can locally. And we need to, each country needs to build their manufacturing base, their productive base, and stop. And, you know, there's the big lie, by the way, is that during the Great Depression, what worsened it were tariffs and trade barriers. That's a lot of baloney. The numbers don't add up on that at all when you go country by country. We need trade barriers. They are flooding the market with slave labor products made by slave labor at low quality and putting the rest of the world out of work. The Indonesians can't even make simple nails, the lowest manufacturing production quality, that to compete with the Chinese. That's how bad it's become.
So look, if we do not make these changes, if we don't reinvent the wheel to some extent and shop local and support local business and support local jobs, if we don't do these things, what are we staring down the barrel of?
We're staring standing down the barrel of a lower quality of life. The economic crisis will continue to worsen as the too big to fails keep taking more and more of our lives. You know, I won't, as I said, I won't go into a Walmart. I won't go into chain stores. I won't drink Starbucks coffee. And this is what people, and we need to support each other. And again, this isn't rhetoric. When you look back, for example, when the United States was the most egalitarian nation on earth, it was when it was about Main Street, not Wall Street. It was about family farms, not factory farms. It was about mom-and-pop businesses, not Walmart.
So does it frustrate you, Gerald? Does it frustrate you? I know exactly what you're saying. Does it frustrate you that you don't seem to get media coverage this side of the Atlantic? The only person to put you on radio over here was me. I am the only person ever to have interviewed you in the UK, as far as I am aware. You just do not get listened to.
No, a year ago, the BBC had me on. Some jerk, I forgot his name, and they tried sandbagging me at the end, saying that I didn't have confidence, and that Mr. Brown was saying that things were going to be much better in the future. You know, that was the only time I was on. The Germans cover me a lot. The Austrians cover me. Turkey, I get a lot. And Ireland, by the way, a lot of Irish radio stations have me on.
Well, this is really good, but I wonder if one of the reasons, perhaps, that you're not getting on as much as I think you should be, is that, of course, all the stuff you are saying goes against the grain of how our government is beginning to work, of how corporations work, more and more power in fewer and fewer hands. So, of course, if you want to go on these big radio stations, these big television stations, your message is anti what they're all about.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, they don't want to hear it. They want the status quo to perpetuate itself. As I said, it comes down to six simple words. Princeton, Harvard, Yale, bullets, bombs, and banks. They want to keep the system going just the way it is. The only reason the system hasn't collapsed worse yet is because of all of the money being dumped into it by stimulus. Whether it's China, India, the UK, US, South Korea, Japan, Australia, all they're doing is printing money to keep the bigs from failing.
And of course, in the UK, after the May elections, those chickens are going to come home to roost. We've got to pay for all of this money that we've put into bolstering things up.
That's right. And as I said, what we're concerned about the most, when all else fails, they'll take you to war.
And do you believe that, as if you read back through history, there are lots of people who've said that's exactly how it's always worked in the past. You know, you have an economic situation to deal with. What's the way to get everybody working again? Well, you have a war, because you then finance the war. You finance defense contractors. People get jobs in those. People are put into the army. And the economic problems come to an end. Why? Because you're fighting somebody.
And they get the people's minds off the domestic problem.
So are we in line for a war, do you think?
We are concerned that when the bailout bubble bursts, the next thing they'll do is they'll trumpet up war. They've done it before, they've done it again. You know, I've watched those that sham as much as I could of the reporting coming in on the hearings going on about the Iraq war in the UK. We don't even have hearings here. And the arrogance of that little poodle, Blair, you know, blabbering away of it. He would still go to war even without weapons of mass destruction. And I was reading again, as I was mentioning to you, I was reading my notes from right after 9/11. Blair was the only one that came to the U.S. following 9/11, and they were talking then about Iraq. And on September 20th, I believe, or just several days after 9/11, here it is. I have my notes here. 9/20. The smoke still smolders, still no. They stopped covering, by the way. These are from my notes. They stopped covering the Pentagon being hit. They never showed footage again a week and a half after 9/11 of the Pentagon.
That's true. And you know, a lot of people, not just you, have been asking, why is that? Why have we never seen the pictures?
Do you know why? why? Because this was the greatest military strike in modern history. That's why. And these people can't... Look, the military in the United States hasn't won a war since World War II. They lost in Korea. They lost in Vietnam. And then they say, oh, but we won the Gulf War. Oh, yeah, no, you didn't. That was just the beginning of the Iraq War. And here goes my notes on further. Tony Blair was only leader coming to U.S. and only one hitting at Iraq. Isn't that something? And then what they did is they began to bomb Iraq just days after 9/11, the UK and the US. They tried to get the people's mind off 9/11. Here it is, Washington, September 20th, New York Times. American and British warplanes attacked Iraqi air defense forces in southern Iraq for the second time in 3 days.
No, I remember that. I covered that on the radio, Gerald, so that's all very firmly imprinted on my mind and everything else that followed it, too. Advice you gave me last time, I've never forgotten. I often think about it. We were talking about the beginning of the recession, depression, whatever you want to call it as it came to be. You said to me, don't spend a cent that you have not got. Realize every penny that you possibly can before it's too late. As we're looking, you know, staring into 2010, got an election on this side of the Atlantic. What is your advice to ordinary people like myself? What ought we to do with our money and our lives?
Well, I'm not allowed to give financial advice because we're trend forecasters, but what I do is all my money for the last several years, every spare penny that I have to invest, I invest it back in my business and I invest it in gold. I don't believe in the paper currencies. We believe there's going to be a financial crisis in 2010. There's going to be a collapse of 2010, a crash of 2010, and to have as much money for myself in gold. And if you're in a currency, and I would hedge my currencies. So, for example, I have half my money in dollars, the cash that I have, and I have half in Swiss francs.
Really?
One goes up, the other goes down. All I want to do is stay even. I don't speculate.
And if this crashes,
you take risks.
Sure. If this crash is coming, as you say it is, during this year, where is the best place on this planet to be? Where should I go?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I went to South America, to checking out different spots. I don't know right now. And I would say the countries that are most civilized to go to, where the governments are less fascist. And by the way, when I mention fascism, the merger of state and corporate powers, according to Mussolini, is called fascism. And that's what we're seeing going on in the UK and in the US, all of a sudden saving all of these companies that are now in bed with government. So fascism has come to America. I would say the countries that are the more civilized ones, like Norway, but I'm concerned about Norway as well because of all of the failing nuclear plants in Eastern Europe that haven't been repaired.
That are right on the doorstep of Norway. Yeah, no, I've never thought of that. And don't forget, of course, economically, well, a lot of us put our money into Iceland that isn't that very far from Norway, and look what happened to Iceland.
Yeah, and the other one I like a lot is New Zealand. I found, and I worked with the New Zealand government, they're very ethical people. It's probably one of the most ethical countries in the world. And that's, by the way, that's really the bottom line. It's about morality. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the governments in so many of these countries are so corrupt anymore, the U.S., the U.K., and so many others. So what I like about New Zealand and doing business with New Zealanders is that, from my experience, these people understand what their word means.
All right. Well, listen, Gerald, I know your time is short, and I'm very, very grateful again to you for taking time out to talk to me here. I am going to get emails from some of my listeners. I got a lot of response about you last time you were on, and they will say to me, this man, the British tend to be a little skeptical about things that are said by people like yourself from across the pond, okay? You know, some of us are like that. They will say, this man is a rabid conspiracy theorist. This is all nonsense. How would you counter that in one sentence, if you could?
By their deeds you shall know them. I will put my trend forecasting record up against anyone in the world. And our forecasts are all documented. They're on our website at trendsresearch.com. We were, by the way, the only people to have called the panic of 08 before it happened. And it's in, we even took out the domain name, the panic of 08, in 2007.
Really?
Yes.
Okay,
so you called it. Excuse me?
You absolutely called it.
Yeah, and one after another. So do we get it right all the time? We're only human. Of course not. But as I said, I'll put my track record up against anyone in the world.
And in the meantime, because we are all very small cogs in a huge wheel as individuals, the best that we can do is to try and support our communities, is to think a little bit more about the headlines that we read in the papers, and by the sounds of it, just pray things are not going to be quite as bad as you think they might be.
Well, and again, it's more than that. It's taking action. And also, we need to reconnect with the arts. Again, following the Black Plague, it was a renaissance. It was an understanding that there were things of the past worth bringing forward again. And it was art that helped bring it forward. In Italy, they used to say, at the height of the Renaissance, alle Romana e alla Antica, in the manner of the Romans and the ancients. And that's what we need to do. We have to. This is in progress what we're going through now. This is devolution. So let's go back to the things that were better, that did make our lives richer, whether it was family, whether it was food and friends and gathering, whether it's on quality. Quality counts. You go into a business with quality, you will continue to succeed.
All right. Well, I have to tell you that about 2 weeks ago, we had some music awards in the UK, and it depressed me greatly to hear that the lead story on many news bulletins the next morning, when there was a lot of big news about, was the big winner of the night, Lady Gaga, the name of this performer. That really did depress me, because it seemed to me that people were taking their eyes off the ball, or they were having their eyes taken off the ball. And that is a little bit of a worry, Gerald, I think.
Exactly, and that's why I'm saying we really need a reconnection to the arts. You know, in the United States, there has been a big movement that went on a number of years ago in bringing back the traditional Latino music, Latino American music. And that whole field, from being nothing, expanded into a great, great genre, because they took the greatness of the real musicians of the past that still had the classical qualities and brought it forward. And it's the same thing with so much of the great music. So and the arts. And that's what we need to get back to. And again, people have to start putting their confidence in themselves. This is a time when you reach into yourself and find the gifts that you have individually and develop them that no one else has.
Well,
and we are all endowed with that unique spirit that we need to bring forward.
Well, I've been saying increasingly on this show, which is heard by people across the UK and around the world, I've been saying, look, there are forms of content, there is information out there that you're not getting to hear, and that is why we all need to look to ourselves, and that is why you need to support small producers of material like the stuff that I do, and many other people who do this as well, because no one else is going to do that for you. If you're waiting for the big corporations to deliver for you, they're not.
Oh, they'll deliver for you. Yeah, they'll deliver you into slavery.
Gerald, a pleasure to talk to you. Just remind us of your website again.
TrendsResearch.com. That's plural, TrendsResearch.com.
Gerald, thank you very much, and please take care. I'm glad that that you're okay after the Chile experience.
Well, thank you very much. Ciao, ciao.
Gerald Celente from Trends Research. I found that fascinating. You may not agree with anything that he said, but at least it's given us both food for thought. And if it makes us think just a little bit harder about the information we're provided and the entertainment we are given and the things that we are told we should believe without question, well, then Gerald has achieved his purpose, and maybe I've achieved mine through this show, because I think that one of the things that we can do in this society is to think and question more than we do. I think a lot of the time we're just expected to sit back and accept what we are told. And one of the reasons you're listening to this show is perhaps you agree with that. Thank you to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for helping get this show out to you. Martin, thank you again for the theme tune. Thank you for your donations via the website, www.theunexplained.tv. If you'd like to make a donation, it would be very gratefully received. Oh, and thank you for the many emails that I've had about my shoulder injury. It's an ongoing situation. I'm still on painkillers. I hope I don't sound like I am, but I'm taking a lot of those at the moment. I have to see a surgeon again tomorrow about this. We're hoping to avoid an operation on it because that is not pleasant. But if you've had any experiences of shoulder injuries you'd like to share with me, let me know because I want to try and get together as much information about all of this as I possibly can. But that's my situation. Thank you very much for your support and the emails. Please keep supporting this show. Please tell your friends about it. And thank you again for listening to The Unexplained. I could not do this without you. My name is Howard Hughes, and this has been The Unexplained.